Well, China, very much in the news right now, the ongoing concerns about militarisation of the South China Sea. You heard the Defence Minister on AM talking about that, plus the anxieties being expressed in some quarters over Huawei's bid to help build Australia's 5G networks, an issue we've devoted time to here on Breakfast. Another upset in the bilateral relationship has emerged with news this morning that a regular visit by Australian journalists to China appears to have been cancelled because the Chinese embassy in Canberra will not issue the visas. The annual tours are hosted by former Foreign Minister Bob Carr, who heads up the Australia-China Relations Institute at the University of Technology in Sydney. Bob Carr is with me this morning. Good morning to you.
Yeah, Hamish, good morning.
Can you confirm or explain what's happened here in terms of this tour?
Well, we've had no difficulties with tours in the past, and they've been very, very valuable in having Australian journalists able to talk to counterparts in China and to Chinese academics and think tankers and government officials and to see the transformation of Chinese cities. But I'm very disappointed that we weren't able to get a visa. And as I put it on Thursday night to His Excellency, the Chinese ambassador, if the delay in getting the approval was part of a freeze in relationships, and I'd have to accept that, I guess. But if it were a bureaucratic challenge, I'd like him to sort it out. But it's turned out to be more than a bureaucratic challenge. I think a policy position.
So this is a freeze in diplomatic relations of some form between Australia and China.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. I think it confirms other evidence and reports that the trade minister was not able to get a meeting with senior Chinese trade officials and the other things that are being referred to, that I haven't been able to confirm, but certainly there have been reports about wine and beef.
Can I just be clear, though, what did the Chinese officials here tell you in terms of your questions about that?
No, I spoke to the ambassador and asked him to look at the delay we were having with his officials in Canberra.
And what did he tell you?
Well, he undertook to do that, but I did say, well, what I said to you a moment ago, that is that if the delay were just a bureaucratic thing, I'd appreciate his intervention in getting it straightened out. I'd like to continue dialogue, people-to-people exchanges, I think are unarguably good in any bilateral relationship. But if it were going to be an instance of the frostiness currently evident in the relationship, then I told him that I'd have to accept that.
I know you're on your way to Macau this morning. Can I just also clarify whether your visa was turned down as part of this or whether it was just the journalists? And how many people in total?
Five or six journalists. I've got a current visa. And yes, I'm going to Macau to a conference on the Belt and Road Initiative. Overall, Hamish, I just think the relationship is, as John Howard acknowledged on Friday, probably in a more serious state of deterioration, this is me talking, not Howard, than it's been in previous phases. One can think of 2009 under the Rudd government or 1996 under the Howard government, before being fixed up by what Howard recommends in this case, face-to-face meetings between the respective leaderships. I think we've drifted with a different rhetoric on China since early 2017, well in advance of the anti-espionage, anti-influence legislation, which was announced in December 2017. And currently, we're the American ally with the most adversarial rhetorical position towards China. Japan, India, a partner of the US, none of the Europeans are experiencing this, and there's no reason we should be in this state.
And is Julie Bishop, the foreign minister, up to the job of repairing this relationship?
Well, I wouldn't focus, unlike Jeff Raby, I wouldn't focus on the question of personnel. I think it's a matter of managing our differences with China over the South China Sea, for example, where my rhetoric as foreign minister, where a foreign minister today would not be different from hers. The insistence that international law applies, including but not limited to the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, is going to be the standard Australian position. But I do think the rhetoric since 2017 has been very, very loose. When a foreign minister says China won't be a great power till it becomes a democracy, we're invoking a rhetoric that we've never done between Whitlam and Abbott. Our position had been...
We are talking to Bob Carr, the former foreign minister. The line appears to be a little weak. We'll just check to make sure that he is still there before continuing with this conversation. He was talking there about Julie Bishop, saying that her position on matters relating to China, not all that far from his own, but that some of the rhetoric had drifted and taken a distinct departure in direction. Bob Carr, is this fair to pin the deteriorating relationship between China and Australia on Australia alone, given that clearly during the time that you're referring to, China's actions and statements and attitudes very clearly towards this region have shifted?
No, I think any review of the literature on this, and I produced a document that called The Tilt on China, which makes it very clear that Australia's rhetoric shifted from January 2017. There can't be an argument about that. Other countries have differences with China over, for example, the South China Sea. And we've got ways of diplomatically engaging with China on that. China's behaviour has been at odds with Australian policy and Australian expectations. But there's no other country. I mean, right now, Japan, for example, is managing its well-rehearsed dispute with China over the East China Sea very, very effectively. Both sides have opted to relegate it and not allow it to stand in the way of discussions on the Korean Peninsula and trade, where they've got common interests, sometimes at odds with those of the interpretation of the Trump administration. I think there's no doubt that Australia's rhetoric has shifted on China from early 2017, and the Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs ignored that.
Didn't it have to shift because of what China has been doing, for example, in the South China Sea?
No. When Julie Bishop gave the Singapore speech in March 2017 and said, in effect, we're now elevating differences over China's system of government, it was noted by other observers. That was a break with a positive trend from Whitlam to Abbott of Australia engaging with China as it is, while looking forward to the day when its political system will become democratic. Australia definitely shifted its rhetoric, and what Billy Bishop and the Prime Minister seem to have been doing from the start of this year is to try to get rhetoric back on track. When Barnaby Joyce says, for example, as Deputy Prime Minister, that the Chinese will overrun us, or Farivati Wells opens up an attack on China overseas development assistance in the Pacific instead of listing it for discussion with the Chinese, or when the Prime Minister on December 7th says that with this legislation, the legislation on foreign influence, the Australian people have stood up using a bit of Chinese political scripture, then it's hard to avoid the impression that Australia's moved away from a national interest-based China policy to a more ideological one. Now, to give the government credit, there's signs that they're trying to pull this rhetoric back. But even Dennis Richardson, the former head of the Defence Department, said that, yes, there has been a lot of loose talk. And Australia hasn't been talking with a single voice on these things, but every minister, Farivati Wells, Barnaby Joyce's acting PM, the Defence Minister, and Julie Bishop, sometimes at odds, it has really been... Not the most nimble-footed Australian diplomacy.
While we have you, we have wanted to ask you questions about what's been in the news relating to you in recent weeks. Michael Danby on this program said that you had effectively tricked Christina Keneally and Kimberly Kitching into asking questions during Senate estimates about the role of John Garnaut in the Prime Minister's office. Is that a fair analysis of what your involvement was?
2 points there, Hamish. First of all, Michael Danby is seeing China as a surrogate for his obsessions about Israel-Palestine. You can't understand his views on foreign policy without reminding himself this is a guy who would have Australia in cold war with China, who'd have Australia in a hot war with Iran, and who'd have Australian troops patrolling the Gaza fence. Such is his hawkishness. He wants to foist an ideological foreign policy on the ALP. I know no one else in the Labor Party who's remotely sympathetic to that. The second point I make is this. It's entirely legitimate to ask questions about the role of someone who we now know is a consultant on the Prime Minister's staff, at the same time as he's running quite a spirited ideological anti-China campaign, appearing in Washington, for example, tweeting quite ideological anti-Chinese messages, and writing opinion pieces that are advocating effectively a wholesale shift in Australian engagement with China. I think it's a matter of public interest that while doing that, he's on the staff of the Prime Minister. If a staff member of the Prime Minister's was engaged in running a foreign policy campaign on another front, on Israel-Palestine, for example, backing one side or the other, or on the Armenian-Turkish question, on being pro or anti Tamil in respect of the lingering issues in Sri Lanka, it would most certainly be a matter of public interest. Australia's national interest has been trashed to a large extent by the ideological edge of his campaign, and at the same time as he's pursuing that, he's on the staff of the PM. I think that's a matter of public interest.
Bob Carr, we have to leave it there. Thank you for talking to us this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure, Hamish. Thank you.
Bob Carr, former Foreign Minister and head of the Australia-China Relations Institute. And I should point out, we have invited John Garnaut on this program as well at various times in recent weeks.